This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll have our training camp check-in a little bit later on this hour. We'll check in with somebody from the Atlanta Falcons training camp to see how things are going so far in year one of Arthur Smith leading up to their 2021 campaign. The NFL season begins in earnest tonight with the Hall of Fame game, so we'll have that coming up. Plus, some thoughts on Urban Meyer after our training camp check-in in Jacksonville yesterday. Team USA has reached the finals of the Olympics. And is all this player movement good for the NBA? The free agency beginning this week. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. And in 1915, they were founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online as well at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work at Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. As always, if you ever miss anything from the show, don't worry, it's podcasted in full. You can find the full show on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the show on demand by going over to charlestonsportsradio.com, and if you click on our show page, you'll find the podcast there. And the third option is downloading our free app, which allows you to not only listen to the show live from anywhere in the world, but also on demand, as the podcasts are available through our app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Got a couple of different things I want to get to here in this segment, so we might as well turn this into our big two at two, because we're going to blend a couple of stories together here.
The big two at two, where Luke recaps the two biggest stories of the day right here on the Morrow Midday Show.
Let's start with how we started the afternoon with this quote that came from the owner of both the Washington Capitals and the Washington Wizards. When comparing Russell Westbrook's path to the path of Alex Ovechkin. And Ovechkin, of course, is one of the biggest stars we have in hockey or have had in recent years. He just signed a 5-year deal with the Washington Capitals that is going to keep him there, well, for another 5 years, and at that point up to about 20 years. Meanwhile, Westbrook just forced his way out of D.C. after a season. And this was the quote from the owner, Ted Leonsis, who owns both the Wizards and the Capitals. And he said, "We had a superstar player with the Wizards. He had an opportunity and wanted to be traded to the Lakers. And I was dealing with that as we were announcing Alex," talking about Ovechkin's new contract. He continued by saying, "I couldn't help but self-reflect on what a difference it is. Here's a great player in Russell Westbrook, played in Oklahoma City, wanted to be traded. Went to Houston, wanted to be traded. Came to D.C., wanted to be traded. And is now in L.A. He's an unbelievably great person and an unbelievably great player, but that's the difference between the NBA and the NHL, I suppose." Now, as I said earlier, I don't know if the NHL is the best example to use to fight against that, but it is the difference between the NBA and really all other sports. Now, before I dive into it, again, to give my disclaimers, I understand. I don't fault the players for getting as much money as they can while they can, and I also don't fault them for using the power they have to move to the teams they want. Because if we were in that position, we would all do the same thing, right? You always want to get as much money as you can, typically. And if you had power to make a different decision or to demand something at work, you would love to as well. You would love to use that power to get a promotion or a raise or whatever it is. Right, just like Russell Westbrook can go to his boss's office and say, "Hey, trade me." And not only that, trade me to the Lakers. He gets exactly what he wants. Wouldn't it be great if you could walk into your boss's office and say, "Hey, pay me this amount." "Oh, okay, you got it." "Right, okay, great." So we would all take advantage of that power if we had it. So I understand why the players do it. But the question at hand, or the point of the quote that stands out to me, is whether it's good for the league or not. Because it's the difference between the NBA and all the other leagues. Free agency is going on right now. And 40% of the NBA are free agents. 40% of the league could theoretically move. In fact, they probably will this offseason. Not many players re-sign. A few will. All right, Chris Paul re-signed, but the majority of players do trade or do change teams. In the last offseason, we had more All-Stars change teams than ever before in NBA history. So not only are a lot of players moving, but I'm not talking about end-of-the-bench guys that are filling out a roster. I'm talking about the stars of the league that are moving. And that's different than the other sports. When you get a Patrick Mahomes, you sign him to a long-term deal. In Major League Baseball, when you have a Ronald Acuna, you sign him to a long-term deal. You sign Fernando Tatis Jr. to a long-term deal. Now, you may do the same in the NBA. The biggest difference would be that deal doesn't mean a whole lot, right? In the NBA, you could sign a guy to a 10-year contract, but still, if he wants to be moved, he's probably going to be moved. Now, maybe he needs to wait towards the end of the contract, right? Like an Anthony Davis. You can't do it too early. You have to wait till there's only a few years left, or it's a little bit easier to get out of. But when players want to move, they can move. Whereas in Major League Baseball, the NFL, you sign those contracts. Sorry, you signed here. You're playing in San Diego if you're Tatis. Until we get rid of you. In the NBA, contracts are kind of meaningless. Players can move whenever they want. Plus, they don't sign that long of deals. They could get out of them. There's free agency. You're trading teams all the time. Look at the NBA. The best players in the NBA. Some of the best players in the NBA. Right, Russell Westbrook has played on, what, three different teams the last 3 years? For Kevin Durant, it's been three teams the last 5 years. Kawhi Leonard, three teams the last 4 years. James Harden is now up to three teams. LeBron James, if you count going back to the Cavs, is at four teams in his career, and all four teams in the last decade. 10 to 11 years, four different teams in the last, or four changes at least in the last about 12 years. Meanwhile, we then focus, that's why we focus so much on these other guys, like Giannis choosing to stay in Milwaukee, and we ooh and on, we're amazed, like, wow, he's actually going to stay. Damian Lillard is the big talk this offseason, and the talk around, like, is he actually going to bail? Or is he going to be bold enough to stay with the same team? Jokic in Denver, that'll be the conversation. Is he going to remain in Denver? And the teams would love to have them for the entirety of their career, but it's really up to the players. Portland doesn't want to get rid of Damian Lillard, but it's up to him this offseason, or next offseason, or whenever, if he's going to demand that trade. And once he demands it, there's really nothing you can do. You can't take it back. I mean, you can, but players usually don't. Once they put it out there, that's the end. Meanwhile, look at the best players in some of the other sports. As I said, Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis Jr., Mike Trout, they get the long-term deals. Juan Soto in Washington. Go back a few years to a Derek Jeter. More currently, Jacob deGrom with the Mets. Sign him to a contract. They don't want him to go anywhere else. Freddie Freeman is going to be a free agent. We'll see, but I'm sure both sides would like to keep him in Atlanta, and Freeman would like to be a Brave for his career. When you have those top-of-the-line players, you don't want to let them get away, because not only is it the best thing for your franchise in trying to win, it's also good for your fans. It's good for what you're trying to build. It's not good when you have all this turnover. Imagine if you worked in a company where there was 40% turnover every year. You wouldn't know your coworkers. It wouldn't feel like some sort of family or that you're in it together. You may go to work today and not feel like your coworkers, right? Like you're a family, but at least maybe you feel like you're all pulling in the same direction. You're in your routine. You know when you can rely on others. You know when you have to ask somebody for help, what they're good at. If the office is turning over at a 40% clip every 12 months, but you remain constant, right? Like, good luck. Good luck getting to know these new workers all the time, and things are changing, and you wonder if you're going to be next. And that's not going to be a high-functioning place. People aren't going to even want to come work there when they see all the turnover. In the NBA, we're turning over these rosters at a 40% clip every year, and usually with some of the top players. Look at the NFL. How often do stars really move around in the NFL? Right? I remember we did this around draft time when I was talking about wide receivers. And a listener called in and said, well, that's because wide receivers go sign other. So I went back and I looked, and I found, I think it was three examples of Pro Bowl wide receivers in the last 20 years that switched teams. You know, like a Plaxico Burress went from the Steelers to the Giants. Very few examples. Now, you just had Julio Jones traded this offseason, forcing his way out. But it doesn't happen all that often where you have that star wide receiver and you don't sign him to a second contract, is what I looked up. That's what it was. players that leave before their second contract. They may leave later in their career once they hit their 30s and aren't quite the same players. But not often does that player, right, get drafted. You see he's really good, and 5 years in, he goes and signs somewhere else. It's only happened two or three times in the last 20 years. Because you know you want to keep those players around. Same idea with quarterbacks. How often do we see good quarterbacks in their 20s get away from a team? They usually stick around. When you get a Patrick Mahomes, you sign him. Now, they may switch teams at the end of their career, a la Brett Favre, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. That may happen, but that's also those were the team decisions. Aaron Rodgers is still with the Packers, even when he's unhappy. It's the only team he's ever played for. Right, Russell Wilson, if he ever leaves the Seahawks, it won't be until he's 35 probably. He'll spend the first 15 years of his career. That's what's best for the league. Instead of Russell Westbrook playing for four teams in 4 years. Imagine if Pat Mahomes bounced around from four teams. That wouldn't be good. When you think back to the NFL and you think back to when you grew up, you remember the quarterbacks, they were the staples, you remember the teams, right? Which quarterbacks you grew up with, and you remember like, oh, back then, right? It was this guy in this city, and this guy, oh, he was the quarterback over there, and oh, those Cowboys with Roger Staubach, I always used to watch them. Oh, we could never beat this team with that quarterback. Right? And you knew you would connect the two. Same idea with the stars in the NBA. You would think back to the 90s or 80s, right? Oh, those Rockets with Olajuwon, they could never beat them. Ewing in New York, and obviously Jordan, and even before that, Magic and Bird. The great players usually stick with the same teams, and it's the best thing for the sport. You know what to expect because we are people that don't like change. But you can also buy the jersey. You can root for them. You can invest, have a vested interest in that player because you know they're going to be on your team for a long time. Is all the player movement in the NBA good? I don't think so. Now, is it hurting the product? I think it hurts more than it helps. How much does it hurt? I don't know. Maybe NBA fans truly don't care. But I think if it was going on like this in other sports, we'd have a problem with it, especially the NFL. Right? Football is the number one sport around here. If players were changing, a 40% of your roster was changing, and some of the best players, like a LeBron, a Harden, a Durant, were playing for three teams in 5 years, I do think football fans would have an issue with that. If Pat Mahomes played for three teams in the next 5 years, I don't think Chiefs fans would like it. I don't think fans of the NFL would like all the movement. He's over here, now he's over here. And it does happen. Well, a lot of guys will bounce around, right? Like Todd Gurley is about to be on his third team in 3 years. But he's a running back that doesn't have much left. I'm talking about the stars. I'm not talking about a guy at the end of his career. I'm not talking about a guy who's fighting for a position. I'm talking about the biggest names in the sport. That's not Todd Gurley. You look at the biggest quarterbacks, right? Lamar Jackson, if it's up to Baltimore, he's not going anywhere. Josh Allen is not going anywhere in Buffalo. They think they're the next stars. They're the stars. Kyler Murray in Arizona won't go anywhere. They believe they're the stars of the future. And when you have that star, you don't let them get away. And I think it's the best thing for the sport when they play there for their entire careers. Or at least 90% of said career, like a Phillip Rivers, like an Eli Manning. And at the end of their career, right, you want to go spend 1 year over there? Phillip Rivers, Brett Favre, and you want to go play a year or two there? We're done with you. You're 40 years old. You had a good career. And you could go elsewhere. In fact, tonight, the Hall of Fame game, we have Ben Roethlisberger. Right, 40 years old playing for the Steelers in his 18th year. I think that's better for the sport than in the NBA where guys are moving around all the time. Now, I did say let's make this the big two at two, so here's the second story. Team USA is in the gold medal game in the Olympics. Came back to win last night. You know, remember we had the Redeem Team a few Olympics ago? Of course, we had the Dream Team. Then our teams weren't doing very well, so we had to have the Redeem Team. This is almost like the Redeem Team. Because they're redeeming themselves not only after that slow start, but they have a chance to beat the teams, you know, that were beating them along the way. They're redeeming themselves. They're making themselves look like the team we were all expecting. They ended up beating Australia by 20 last night, or this morning, depending on how you look at it, right after midnight. Beat them by 20. They were down 15 in the first half. They go on a 20-0 run. They have a dominant third quarter. They put the game away. They end up winning by 20. And now they're heading to the finals to play for gold against France. Oh, that Team France, that thorn in the side of Popovich and Team USA, and they have a chance to redeem themselves and win gold after all. And France beat Luka Doncic. What a game that was. When Batum had the block at the buzzer, essentially, on a layup that would have lost it for France. He had a game-saving block to go to the gold medal game against Team USA. Big win for Team USA. Now, here was Brian Windhorst on SportsCenter on ESPN talking about Kevin Durant, not only the win for Team USA, but also how Durant is the guy that is carrying this team and how good he has been in the Olympics.
Kevin Durant is how they did it, because the U.S. were tight in this game. This was a huge game for Australia. They've been preparing for it for a long time. They had a really good game plan, and it was working. And Kevin just put his head down, got a few baskets that they really needed late in the first half to make it a three-point game. And Drew Holiday was terrific on defense against Patty Mills. He just wasn't able to get going. He's a vital player for Australia. And once Kevin Durant came out and hit some more baskets in the third quarter, it was like the entire U.S. team could just relax. And that's what happened. They turned into a blowout. But I'm telling you, it's Durant. Durant is powering this thing. It's very impressive to watch.
Brian Windhorst talking about Team USA beating Australia to get to the finals. They outscored Australia 32-10 in the third quarter. They were trailing at halftime. They came out in the third quarter and put it away. And sorry, spoiler alert, I guess, because it wasn't – I still don't get why these games aren't live on TV. You can watch it online, and then I don't know when they're actually showing it on TV, if they are, on tape delay. So apologies if you still haven't watched it yet. You were hoping to watch it tonight or something. But good luck avoiding – you shouldn't be listening to sports talk if you're trying to avoid the score. So if you didn't stay up for it, if you're hoping to watch it later, whatever, just know that the Team USA put it away in the third quarter with a dominant performance and ended up blowing out Australia. Durant went for 23-9. Durant has been the star, but Drew Holiday – coming off that finals victory, has been huge as well. 11 points, 8 assists, 8 rebounds, but most importantly, it's what he does on the defensive end. He's the best defensive player they have, and he's been a huge in terms of just what he's added to that team. And Team USA was missing that when they were struggling early on, and the NBA Finals were still going on, and they didn't have Middleton yet, and they didn't have Booker, and they didn't have Holiday. Drew Holiday has made a big difference for Team USA. And after all the concern, they are, in fact, will be playing for the gold tomorrow. And have a chance to redeem themselves, not only for the early struggles, but also against France, and show that they are the best basketball team in this Olympic Games. And that takes me to this. When we come back, Simone Biles spoke out about what she was dealing with this past week at the Olympics. And this is not in any attempt to try to pile on, but she said something that I think is completely off base, and it's connected to Team USA, to the basketball team, as well as also the women's soccer team. We'll get to all that when we come back. Plus, we'll check in with the Falcons training camp a little bit later on this hour as well. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today? It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Let me tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners. Now with their to-go service, it's easier than ever before. They can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, and casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them today to schedule a free pickup. 843-377-6994. You can even track your dry cleaning to see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. And the best part, just mention that you heard about them right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, with their to-go service now, easier than ever before. Last segment, I was talking about Team USA and getting their win to go to the gold medal game against France. Now, it is, I believe, sometime tomorrow, again, with the whole time difference, right? They usually play these games at like 1:30 a.m. Eastern time because it's a 13-hour difference. So that may be the case with this game, and I don't know when they're actually going to air it on TV because none of the basketball games are even live on TV. They're on the streaming service, or you have to watch it online. And I don't know. I don't know how the Olympics, how NBC, all this stuff works. I just try to follow along as best as I can. But while thinking about that, I think that also relates to this. Simone Biles, of course, we know, removed herself from at least some of the events in gymnastics in the Olympics, and because of mental health. Now, when we hear mental health, we always think, you know, maybe like somebody is suicidal or dealing with depression. We always think the most serious incidents. And with Simone Biles, I don't want to speak for her, but it seemed like it was more about the performance where she had the twisties. And so, as she said, she thought it would be best to remove herself. I don't know if it was one of those, like, you know, extreme depression on watch really have to be concerned. I think when you say mental health, it, more so in this case, it was just mentally, for her performance, she wasn't all there, or, you know, had those twisties, which is the mental side. When you have the yips, that's not physical, right? In baseball, when Chuck Knoblauch couldn't throw it from second to first, it wasn't physical. He's done it 100 million times. It was mentally. And so it'd be like if he got a day off, right? Coaches say that in baseball, he needs a mental day. When a batter's slumping, right? He needs a mental day. It's not because he is, you know, depressed to the point that you have to worry about the guy, but it's, you know, just mentally, it's holding him back athletically. So I think that may be more of what Simone Biles was dealing with. She did come back and perform, and performed and won the bronze this week. But anyways, I bring this all up because she talked with Mike Tirico on NBC and talked for the first time, really opened up about why she did step away from those events in the Olympics. Here's what Simone Biles had to say.
I feel like it's hard, but it's harder being a female athlete because, you know, everybody prays for your downfall and wants you to mess up and all of that stuff. And I don't think they take in consideration of our mental health because what we do isn't easy or else everybody could do it. But also at the end of the day, we're not just athletes or entertainment. We're human too. And we have emotions and feelings and things that we're working through behind the scenes that we don't tell you guys about. And so I just think it's something that people should be more aware of.
Simone Biles talking to Mike Tirico. I buy into all that. I get it. I'm understanding. These athletes face incredible pressure. The one thing that stands out to me that I strongly disagree with was when she highlighted the fact that it's because she's a female. And as she said, people pray for her downfall. I strongly disagree with that opinion. Ask LeBron James if things would be tougher for him, right? If it's easier for him because he's a male athlete. Or ask Tom Brady. I do not buy into this idea whatsoever that we as sports fans are tougher on female athletes. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think we're a lot easier on female athletes. And the reason why I connect this to Team USA and to talk about them last segment in that sound clip is because the women's soccer team, our women's soccer team, which is supposed to be the best, supposed to be dominant, and they have been. Did they win gold this Olympics? No. Have you heard anything about it? Because I haven't. But Team USA, the men's basketball team, they're in the gold game tomorrow. Have you heard a lot of complaints about their performance? Because I have. I've made some of those complaints. But when they were struggling early on in exhibition games, that was a main story on national media. When the women's soccer team struggled throughout this entire Olympics and did not get to the championship round, have you heard anything about it on this station when you turn on the TV? Because really, I'll be honest with you, maybe I wasn't tied in enough, but I did not. We do not hold, right? WNBA, ask WNBA players if they take as much heat as LeBron James and NBA players. So I do not buy this. Also, the idea that we pray for her downfall, I will say that a lot of people attack Simone Biles, maybe treated her unfairly, right, were rude when she did remove herself from those events. But in terms of praying for her downfall, that's another thing I've never seen or witnessed. When she is actually participating, I think sports fans either root for her to succeed because she is representing our country, or just don't care. I don't think I've seen anybody prior to the last couple of weeks, like in the last 4 years, actively conversing online saying, like, oh, I hope Simone Biles doesn't make the Olympics. I hope she struggles. I'm so tired of her. Whereas, go online any given day and see how many people are rooting for the downfall of a LeBron James or a Tom Brady or now maybe even a Patrick Mahomes or a Kevin Durant or a James Harden or even in baseball, something, right, the Yankees or the players on the team, whatever it is. So I strongly disagree that there's more pressure or people that are tougher or they treat her unfairly because she's a female. I think it's the opposite. I actually think our female athletes don't get the heat as much as the male athletes because just as sports fans, right, wrong, whatever, we just aren't as locked in to the women's sports. Even like the Lady Gamecocks, as good as that program is and the high expectations, I think there's more pressure and more heat on the men's team when they struggle than when the Lady Gamecocks may lose a game or two. And they're much better, so they don't have the same struggles as the men's team. Right? But, like, ask LeBron James if he thinks, right, people are it's because Simone Biles is a female. He would tell you, hey, I'm dealing with the same thing, and then some. People attack me every day. And I am also the greatest of all time. So I strongly disagree with that take. I'm sure she has tons of pressure on her shoulders. I'm sure it's not easy for her. All that. Everything else she said, I completely agree with and understand. but I can't buy into this idea that in part it's because she's a female athlete and we as sports fans root for that female athlete to suffer some sort of downfall. I do not see that occurring.
A lot more people are still talking about you than they are Sunisa Lee, the one who pulled through when you backed out, and she won the women's all-around gold this year.
Yeah, that's like the Jeff, I can never say his name, Hostetler. What was the quarterback?
Hostetler.
I can never say that name for some reason. Anyways, right? Remember when he won a Super Bowl instead of Phil Sims? You never hear about that, though. Unfortunately, we never focus on the people that step in and perform the job. The last point I'll make about this is the same idea. When Simone Biles returned, did she win the gold? No, she won the bronze, and that was celebrated. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but let's not sit here and say that people are rooting for her downfall. The first thing when you Google her name I see here is Simone Biles wins beam bronze in remarkable comeback. If that was LeBron James and he finished in third place, you know what the article would be? It wouldn't be, hey, LeBron finished in third this year in remarkable comeback from injury. No, it wouldn't be. So I strongly disagree. I think we're certainly unfair to athletes, unfair to a lot of athletes, and more so to our male athletes, who draw a lot more attention than Olympic athletes in general or female athletes as well. We have to get to our training camp check-in, but before we do so, Joe, I know you also had this audio. We had our wrestling wrap-up last hour. We didn't have time to get to this, but this was also from the Olympics.
Yeah, Tamira Mensah-Stock, who won the 68-kilo division in women's wrestling. She won gold.
Yeah.
A little bit different than what some of the athletes have been getting more attention for doing these days. Oh, and she does want to be a WWE superstar.
Oh, of course.
So maybe this will work out for her.
Who doesn't want to be?
How does that feel to represent your country like this?
It feels amazing. I love representing the U.S. I freaking love living there. I love it, and I'm so happy I get to represent USA! Love it.
The athletes that are doing kind of the opposite are the ones getting all the attention. The ones getting all the attention are the ones saying the opposite nowadays.
Right. She is one who is very patriotic, loves the country. And I think when you're representing the country, look, you can have a lot of problems with this country. We do have problems. But then I would say, you know, maybe if that's the case, you know, think again about representing it. But for someone representing it, representing the country, she certainly loves the country that she was representing. Coming up, we'll check in with the Atlanta Falcons training camp when we come back. Our latest training camp check-in. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. And it's time for our latest training camp check-in, which today takes us to Atlanta Falcons training camp as the NFL preseason officially begins tonight. Joining us now is Michael Rothstein, who covers the Falcons for ESPN. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Rothstein, and he's with us now. Michael, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Let's dive right in because there's a lot of interesting things with the Falcons team this year, and let's start with the head coach. First-time head coach for, you know, as Arthur Smith is for the Falcons. So far, how has he acclimated himself as a head coach running a training camp so far this year at the Falcons?
I mean, he's been fine. There hasn't been a ton of things to really note. He is having players run laps if they make mistakes. The entire offense has done that now twice, once the first-team offense, once I think it was either the second or third team offense that happened on the far field, and I was watching some first team reps. But pretty much, it looks like a training camp practice. You're not getting anything too wild, too crazy. It's run pretty crisply, pretty efficiently, and he's just kind of rolling with it. And that's not a surprise if you watch anything that you saw from him in the spring or if you've talked to him at all, because that's pretty much, he's an even keel kind of guy.
Right. Yeah, I love these hires for the Falcons, him and even Dean Pease, which I'll ask you about in a moment. But I like the move bringing Arthur Smith in. We know what he did in Tennessee, and we know what he liked to do offensively there. Again, I know it's training camp. It can be hard to decipher. But just watching so far, Arthur Smith, this personnel, you know, does it seem like a good fit, his offense, his style, with the pieces he has here in Atlanta?
Well, here's the thing, right? I think that Arthur Smith is the guy that will adapt to the players that he has. And in Tennessee, that team was very much built around Derrick Henry around running the ball and running it a lot. I think Arthur Smith still wants to run the ball, but you look at the pieces that he has right now in Atlanta, and, hey, they are pieces that are, frankly, more suited to passing. You have a quarterback in Matt Ryan who gives you about 4,000 yards and anywhere between 25 and 30 touchdowns a year. You have a true number one receiver in Calvin Ridley. You have a tight end in Kyle Pitts that you drafted that can be really, really special. So you see all of these things. They have all of these things. And what they really don't have, actually, is a true running back. Mike Davis is their number one running back right now. Behind him is a bunch of question marks. Cordarrelle Patterson, the converted wide receiver, and Quadri Olison, who got no work last year, essentially are vying for number two. And then beyond that, you've got undrafted free agents. So I think based off of the personnel, you should see a lot more passing, and you should see it maybe be a pass-first offense than one that you saw in Tennessee with Derrick Henry getting 2,000 yards and 300-plus carries. That's just how it feels, how it seems based off of personnel. And Arthur Smith has said for a long time he's going to go based off of his personnel.
And, of course, the most important piece in all that is Matt Ryan, as he mentioned, now in his 14th year, 36-year-old. Recommitted to him here in this offseason. How has Matt looked so far in the training camp leading up to this season?
He's been okay. He's been fine. You know, he's had good days. He's had bad days. More good days than bad, but he had a couple really bad ones. There are a couple stinkers in there, particularly on Saturday. He was thrown behind guys. But Matt Ryan looks like Matt Ryan, and this is my first training camp covering him, because I was covering the Lions for 8 years before that. But he looks like the quarterback that I've seen when the Lions played the Falcons in the past, when I've watched Falcons games in the past. Like, this is basically the guy that I thought he was. He's getting acclimated with the new scheme and a bunch of new players, too, because Kyle Pitts is new, Russell Gage is in a new role, Olamide Zaccheaus is in a new role. So you're getting new guys in there, and that's maybe part of the problem right now. But I think by the time Week one comes around, Matt Ryan's going to be fine.
Let me ask you about a couple of other players. Kyle Pitts, of course, was the big name in the draft and high expectations for him entering Atlanta right away. Has he, you know, been able to wow you so far in training camp? Have you seen some plays from him that you see like, oh, yeah, I see what everyone's been talking about with this kid already?
Yeah, Kyle Pitts is really special. Like, there's no question to me about that, no doubt about that. He is really, really potentially going to be a nightmare for opposing teams. He is athletic. He can line up anywhere on the field, and he can catch pretty much anything. And there was a play, I don't know, one day, 2 days ago, it all blends together right now during the dog days of training camp, where it was a red zone play. The ball got tipped in the air as it kind of got to him. The ball was floating in the air. He had enough concentration as he was being hit, as he was falling down, to grab it. And it was maybe the play of training camp so far, and it showed you the athleticism that Kyle Pitts has, but we've seen that day in, day out so far in flowery branch.
What about for Calvin Ridley? I know he didn't practice today, one of those veteran days off. There's concern about the foot because behind Ridley, there's not a ton of wide receiver depth now without Julio Jones. How concerned should Falcons be with Ridley and his health here, at least to start the season?
You know, I don't think there should be much concern. They're taking a semi-conservative approach, it feels like, with him. He did have the quote-unquote veteran rest day today, but he'd been out there. He had essentially a full day of work yesterday, and he said he's completely, totally fixed. Now, he looks fine. I watched him intently. I think it was the first or second day of training camp. I watched almost every move he made, particularly during individual drills, watched his footwork, watched his speed, tried to get a feel on where he was. And again, this is my first year covering the team, so I don't have that baseline from last year or the year before to gauge it, but he looks special. He looks explosive. His feet look fine. Nothing that I have seen makes me think that there's any reason for concern with Calvin Ridley at this point. And I think if there was, they would have taken a very, very conservative approach with him. And, you know, we might not have even seen him yet.
They need a big year out of him. Talking with Michael Rothstein, who covers the Falcons for ESPN. With this passing attack, this offense, how much do you think the Falcons will truly miss Julio Jones this year now that he's off in Tennessee?
I mean, listen, Julio Jones is a Hall of Famer. You're going to miss a Hall of Famer. Even if he's a Hall of Famer that was 80%, 90%, you know, 75% maybe of what he was in his true, true prime. But he's a really good player still, and you're going to see that in Tennessee this year. That said, wide receiver, to me, was really the one position where they had good depth, where they had a guy that's not going to come in and replace that production in Russell Gage. But Russell Gage is a guy that can maybe give you 1,000 yards. You saw that a little bit last year when Julio Jones was hurt. And Russell Gage is going to have a more familiar role in this offense. Plus, you have Kyle Pitts, and that's going to be somebody who's going to take some targets. So it's not going to be one guy that's going to be replacing Julio Jones. It's going to be a group of guys, alongside the fact that Calvin Ridley is now your number one receiver, and he's going to have some of that too. But listen, we all saw what Calvin Ridley did last year when he was the number one receiver in half of the games of the season. And, you know, even though he didn't make the Pro Bowl, it was basically Pro Bowl level.
Couple last things for you. I do have to ask you about the defense and Dean Pees, who I referenced earlier. I liked the hire of Arthur Smith, but I think I liked even more bringing Pees in. Three previous stops as a defensive coordinator, he's had a top 10 defense all three places, and usually pretty quick. And then the real sign is when he leaves, the defenses usually get worse, especially in Tennessee. What should we expect? Because this Falcons defense has been terrible the last couple of years. What should expectations be for this defense under Dean Pees immediately in year one?
You know, listen, I don't know the answer to that question yet, because I think one of their big pieces still isn't available. He's been on the COVID reserve list, and Dante Fowler, they need a lot at him, because otherwise they're not sure where they're getting the pass rush from. Really not sure. Grady Jarrett might be their best pass rusher otherwise, and that's not great when that's coming from the interior, unless the guy's name is Aaron Donald. But Grady Jarrett's a very, very, very good player, but Aaron Donald, obviously, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame lock, I feel like, at this point, probably. So you look at that and you say, well, okay, where's this pass rush coming from? A.J. Terrell has had a fantastic camp, and he's been doing it against good guys, starter guys, Calvin Ridley-type guys. So that's a bonus there that maybe you have your number one corner. But this defense is very thin and has some good top-end guys. Linebacker, your starters are really good. But they're an injury away from having major problems almost any position on the defense. And for Dean Pees, that's going to mean a lot of creativity, but that's what Dean Pees does best, is be creative, find ways to get the most out of what he's able to work with. And I think that we're going to see that early and often in Atlanta.
Talking about Michael Rothstein, before we let you go, I do have to ask you about some sort of prediction. I said on the show earlier this week, we went through teams that I thought have the largest variance in the NFL this year, teams that are the hardest to peg down. And for the Falcons, I could see them, year one of Arthur Smith, you know, coming off a tough year, I could see them struggling. But also with all the close losses last year, you add Kyle Pitts, sometimes a coaching change is all you need. We've seen that with other teams in year one of coaches. I could also see the Falcons, you know, competing for a wild card spot and maybe getting to 10 wins. So I ask you, as somebody that's, you know, covering the team and tied into them, what should expectations be from like a win total for this Falcons team this year?
Oh, man. I think it's all over the board. And I hate to make these types of calls, especially when I haven't seen them against another team yet, either in the preseason or those joint practices in Miami in a couple weeks. So this isn't me copping out of the question. It's more just saying, I really don't know. They could be a 7-10 team. They can be a 10-7 team. I think that that's probably the variance. And it would not shock me if they were either one of those things. Would it surprise me if they won 13 games? Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised. Would it shock me if they won 4? Yeah, I'd probably be pretty surprised, because I think their offense is good enough to win some games. And I don't think they're among the truly bad teams in the NFL. I think they're probably in that second tier when you're going from bottom up. But to me, this whole year is about evaluation and figuring it all out for the Falcons, because then after this year, if things go well, then you can roll with it. If things don't go well, then you have some – or things are kind of in that mediocreville like we were talking about, then Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot have some really big decisions to make on guys like Jake Matthews, guys like Matt Ryan, whether they want to kind of continue on that path or they – say, hey, okay, you know what? It's time to really start over again before they get too deep into their tenures, where starting over again probably means real trouble for them, and you kind of feel that out. Like, this year, to me, feels like a, hey, figure everything out year. Everyone understood they had to make moves and were hamstrung by the salary cap, but eventually that's going to change, and then at that point, really figure out where the direction of this franchise is going to go.
He's Michael Rothstein, covers the Atlanta Falcons for ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Rothstein. Read his work online at ESPN.com. Stay up to the minute with everything going on with the Falcons, especially this training camp. Michael, appreciate the time, and enjoy your first season here covering the Falcons.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Yeah, you as well. Appreciate it. Pleasure's all ours. Michael Rothstein from ESPN. The latest on our training camp check-ins as we check in with the Atlanta Falcons. Tomorrow we'll check in with the Texans. We'll check in with the Panthers next week. And then I'm considering if it's worth going around the NFC South. Check in on the Saints this time of year. Check in on even the Buccaneers. Maybe we'll do that next week as well. But tomorrow we head to Houston to figure out the latest on Deshaun Watson. Some rumors last night about the Eagles aggressively trying to pull off a trade right now for Deshaun. So we'll get the latest there as he is the quote-unquote fourth-string quarterback right now, waiting to see what's going to happen in Houston. We'll try to figure it out tomorrow on the show. Appreciate the time from Michael. The Falcons begin their preseason schedule next Friday, right? Of course, we have the Hall of Fame game tonight. It's the only game this week. It's like week zero of college football. Week one's next weekend. And so the Falcons host the Tennessee Titans, Arthur Smith's old team, coming to town next Friday. And as I shared earlier this week, first-year head coaches in their first home preseason game cover the spread 65% of the time. And if you win 65% of your bets, you're buying a new house, right? Arthur Smith, week one or game one at home against his former team as well. I know it's over a week away, but next Friday, I don't know what the spread will be. I don't know who's even going to play in the game, but those coaches want to make a good first impression in front of the home crowd, especially against his former team. If you're a betting man, take a look at that Falcons-Titans game. I know it's preseason football. You got to be a real degenerate to gamble on it, but sometimes it's easier to predict than the regular season when it comes to football. And I like the Arthur Smith hire. By the way, Arthur Smith, I was watching him talk to the media this week because the Falcons have had some COVID issues. They had five guys on the COVID reserve list, the COVID list, that had to be away from the team. I was watching Arthur Smith, and I love that hire. And I was trying to think of, who does he look like? And I think I figured it out. I think Arthur Smith looks like the actor Michael Cera, except if Michael Cera was allergic to peanuts and just had a handful of Planters, right? Some salted peanuts. That's what Arthur, he looks like a bloated Michael Cera. That's what I think he looks like. But I think it was a good hire. And I think Dean Pease may be the even better hire because what has been the Falcons' issue? Defense. Even though Dan Quinn, their head coach, was a defensive guy, it wasn't the offense. The offense should be fine this year. Ridley, Kyle Pitts, Matt Ryan, even Mike Davis in the backfield, Arthur Smith calling the plays, they'll score enough points. Will it be like a top 10 offense? We'll find out, but it's not going to be a bottom 5 offense. They got weapons. But the defense has been terrible. I mean, it's been one of the worst defenses in the league the last 5 years. And Dean Pease, all three places he's gone, he's developed a top 10 defense all three places. And he does it pretty quick. Year one in New England, it was year three in Baltimore. But before that, they were a top 12 defense his first 2 years. Then he goes to Tennessee, and the first year, they're the number 3 defense. And the real sign of somebody who's good at what they do, can you replace them? When he left New England, it was after the 2009 season, even Bill Belichick said, that's when he took over. He said, I'm going to be the defensive coordinator. The Patriots defense took a step back. That's when they had a reload. They lost all their veterans, and they had a bunch of guys he never heard of, and Bill Belichick's calling the plays. They struggled. Baltimore, when he left a couple years ago, that's when Baltimore took a step back. Remember, Joe Flacco, at the end of his career, was 500 quarterback until Lamar Jackson came in. Their defense wasn't as strong. Tennessee, left Tennessee, he retired. Last year, Tennessee had a historically bad defense. So that's another sign of a good coach, and Dean Pease, I think, will do a good job with this Falcons defense. Appreciate the time from Michael Rothstein. We'll have our next training camp check-in on the show tomorrow. We'll wrap up your Thursday. When we come back, it's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
A funky finish here Thursday here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show podcasted online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. And you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us also online at charlestonsportsradio.com. TuneInRadio.com. You can also stream the show from anywhere in the world through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through that app, you can listen to the Morrow Midday Show from anywhere in the world. And you can also listen to the podcast anytime as well. Those are available through the app. Appreciate listeners hanging out with us from at least 10 different states and 3 different countries on this Thursday afternoon. Can the Braves accomplish something tonight that they haven't done all year? First, let's look back to last night quickly before we go. They got their first win in 12 games in which they were tied after 7 innings. Think about that. The previous 11 times when the Braves were tied that late in the game, they blew them all. They finally found a way to win last night, beating the Cardinals 7-4. They blew the lead in the 7th, came back, scored the eventual winning runs in the 8th, and got back to .500. First time they won consecutive games since the All-Star break. First time in 10 tries that they registered a win to get back to .500. The previous 9 times when they were a win away from .500, they lost all of them. So now, is getting over .500 next? Can they check that off their list next tonight when they continue this series with St. Louis? 8:15 first pitch in St. Louis, and Touki Toussaint on the mound coming off that terrible outing. Only 3 teams have failed to reach a winning record this year. The last place Rangers, the last place Marlins, and somehow still the Braves. And yet the Braves are only 2.5 games behind the struggling Mets. It's crazy. They've never been over .500, and they're 1 good weekend away from first place. We'll see if they can get it done tonight, finally get over .500. I think this is a matchup of the most disappointing teams in baseball this year. I think the Cardinals are probably the most disappointing. I guess the Braves, they were 1 win away from the World Series. The Braves are probably the most disappointing team in baseball. The Cardinals are right there, too. I told you the Cardinals were a long shot, or not even a long shot, but you know, a bit of a team to that everyone was overlooking that could win the World Series. They're under .500 now. They've been lousy. And then I guess you could say other disappointments. The Angels are .500, even though they have Ohtani and Trout. Trout's been injured this year, but the Angels never compete. The Mets, even though they're in first place, haven't been good enough. They've been kind of disappointing. The whole NL East has been disappointing. And the Yankees were pretty disappointing. Everyone thought they'd win the World Series. They're still in third place, but playing better baseball now and getting close to that wild card in the AL. Some of the most disappointing teams in baseball. But I think tonight we get maybe the 2 most, Braves and Cardinals. Can the Braves finally get over .500? If they win tonight, they'll be over .500 for the first time all year, and we'll celebrate it on the show tomorrow. Until then, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. We'll check in on the latest with Arch Manning and Clemson, and also check into the Texans training camp with Deshaun Watson situation. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.